Youth Sports Now presents Your Peak Performance, topics that support the well-being of your young athlete, presented by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester.
We are back on Youth Sports Now, and it is the Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training segment, and we've got our good friend Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training. How's it going today, Mike?
I'm doing awesome, Greg. How's it going with you?
Great, thanks. Hey, I hear you've got a big volleyball game to attend tonight.
Our varsity team at Arundecoit's got a game against Batavia, and it's always a real pleasure to be able to go watch the girls play and especially see my daughter Mandy play, so I am looking forward to that.
Well, great. We've got, our folks from McQuaid were our guests in the first two segments, and we were talking about the big McQuaid, the 49th annual McQuaid Invitational, which is one of the biggest cross-country meets anywhere in the United States, and, just thousands of runners and all sorts of schools going to be there for this event. So, I think it makes sense, to go to a cross-country question. And actually, we have one, Mike, from one of our listeners. And it sounds like this young person is one of the athletes who knows, may be running this week. The question they ask of you is, I'm running in fall cross-country. And with the weather changes, is there something that I should do to make my pre-run stretching more effective? They're located here in Rochester, and they're going to be running in the cold. And obviously, it looks like this weekend we've got some good weather coming, but they may be running in the cold. So what can you help them with?
I think that's a really good question. It's timely, obviously, with the fall coming and things cooling off and the rain with colder weather. Athletes are definitely wondering what's the right thing to do. And I think so with the McQuaid Invitational here on board this weekend, it's even more fitting. So, yeah, let's go back for a moment in talking about this to something that we've talked, maybe many months ago, but it's a really important point to bring up again. I like how they asked the question because it feeds right into the topic. They talked about pre-run stretching. And I want to just, remind and educate and caution listeners that athletes really need to be thinking about, coaches need to be thinking about, are we talking about stretching or are we talking about to warm up? Are we talking about flexibility? Athletes who are lacking motion should be doing stretching regularly to gain flexibility. And that's something that would be happening every day, every 2 days. You're doing that regularly, much like you'd think of a dancer or a martial artist who's trying to gain more mobility. Now, many runners, have flexibility issues, but some don't. And so the question then becomes, how much stretching do you need to do as part of your pre-run warm-up? And so the idea of that word warm-up is really critical, Greg. We've talked before about the difference between flexibility and stretching juxtaposed with dynamic warm-up. And I think that's really what this athlete needs to be looking for, is those sorts of drills where they're gradually building up their metabolism, they're increasing their body temperature, they're turning on the nervous system. Stretching is one of those things that if you're sitting down on the floor and doing kind of a quiet, a static stretching sort of routine, will tend to lower your metabolism, sort of dulls the nervous system. Yes, absolutely, you're lengthening tissues. But the problem is that if you do that right before an activity, it's not really the best preparation. So yes, those athletes should be stretching. We certainly ideally like to see them do that in a warmed-up state. If they feel more comfortable doing that indoors, where it's a little bit warmer first, that's fine. But absolutely, prior to the event, we would recommend get yourself out there in the weather that you're going to be in. Go ahead and do a dynamic warm-up routine. And we've talked about that a little bit before. We really like to see them include three planes of motion. Running is very much a sagittal plane, which is the name for forward and backward motion. We see the legs and the arms moving forward and backward. But really, when you watch runners, there's very critical things that are going on in the transverse plane or twisting, and some very important things in the side-to-side plane or frontal motions. And so we really want to see that athlete, Greg, begin doing warm-ups, lunges, balancing and reaching, leg swings, locomotion-based things where they're jogging and backpedaling and lunge walking and skipping and hopping, doing some of those multi-directional locomotor and warm-up sort of activities so that now they're picking up their body's metabolism, they're turning on the nervous system, so that body is really prepped and ready to go. And I think that, yes, they can do that indoors. That's part of the question this runner had. Sure, you can do it indoors, but you're going to go compete in that weather outside. I think you've got to get yourself prepared for it. So getting back outside and making sure, especially if it's cool outside, you haven't warmed up out inside, go stand outside and sort of cool back down, standing still, and then wait for your race. Get yourself moving outside, outdoors, get your body warmed up and acclimated so that when that event starts, you're ready to go.
And Mike, I would assume that, you know, from your perspective as a physical therapist, that, you know, doing that outside in the weather where they're going to be running in a cross-country meet is probably even more so important with the cross-country runners when you consider this. If they were in a track meet, they're going to be at least, in most cases, on a level field or a level surface. With the cross-country people, they're going to be going up and down hills. They're going to be on pavement. They're going to be, I'm sure, hitting potholes and, you know, all sorts of natural obstacles. So being out there to do this dynamic warm-up is probably more important for the cross-country runner than maybe we would think.
Greg, I love your thought process. It's almost like I think you work for us. We might have to hire you in the clinic. That line of thinking is absolutely perfect. It speaks volumes to the concept of understanding why, particularly, like you said, a cross-country runner who deals with slopes of surfaces, uneven surfaces, inclines and declines, uniquely compared to someone who may be on a track running on a flat surface, has to prepare and warm up for those things. Sometimes we make the mistake in a running sport like that of just jogging and running forward and forgetting that there's going to be inclines and declines and uneven surfaces, and that's where what we called the frontal side-to-side and the transverse, the twisting, directions of movements and preparations can be so important, because if a runner prepares themselves in what we call that sagittal plane, the forward and backward movement that's very common, and they do that only, and now they're in the race and they hit an uneven surface while they're running on an incline or a decline, and they get bumped by somebody else and they get knocked off, you know, the question becomes, number one, are you prepared physically to deal with that and not get hurt? But then number two, are you prepared to still perform at a high level, or does that kind of knock you off, throw you off a little bit, and now, you know, someone else has a few body length lead on you, and you have a hard time, you know, gradually they start taking that lead away, and you're struggling because you get knocked off a little bit, because it's not the perfect path you've been practicing. That variety is key, we think.
Well, Mike, you know, let's take it a step further, and no pun intended with the cross-country running, but, you know, in any sport, you have athletes who are going to be potentially rehabbing with you at peak performance, and they're working with you, and they might be working with a sports trainer at school. So the question that I have for you is, you know, when they're rehabbing, you know, if they're tentative, couldn't they create another injury? And isn't that something that you as the PT, but also if they have a trainer at school, and of course, shouldn't the coach be aware of it, and how can they avoid it?
Absolutely. That's Greg, that's actually a much deeper question than you realize, or even the listener that I think wrote that in realizes. First, let's talk about it at the level that you asked it. You know, we're talking about the patient themselves getting too tentative, and I agree totally. You know, I think our job in physical therapy is we've got to help them have been prepared so well by the rigors of the tasks that we do, by the variety, by the volume, by the intensity, by the multiple directions, by the unexpected reactions, all those things that may be part of various sports. If we've prepared them well, then when they go back, there shouldn't be that tentativeness. I think we like to say that competence builds confidence. And so I think if we can design programs as physical therapists and at my place at Peak Performance, if our therapists can build a program that appropriately challenges an athlete, that gives them competence in various tasks. I know I can land and have my knee wobble on me and save myself. I know that I can throw the ball really hard and my shoulder doesn't go out. I know that I can land from that volleyball spike and not sprain my ankle because I've done those drills so aggressively in rehab, but progressively, not just aggressively, but progressively, sensible build-ups over time, that I now have confidence as what I was, an injured athlete. With that competence, now I can have confidence. Because you don't want, exactly like you said, you don't want an athlete going out and being tentative and risking injury. And oftentimes, you know, we think, well, just play light. It's really difficult if you have these natural instincts and these motor patterns of how you played the sport before, and you go back and you're holding back too much, I agree totally. Being tentative can actually add to risk. It doesn't necessarily reduce the risk. But this question actually should push us as physical therapists and just professionals in general a bit as well. I think let's turn this around, Greg, and let's say, what about the physical therapist himself? You've got to make sure that you have a physician, an athletic trainer, and in our case, a physical therapist, who is really well-versed in the biomechanics of function, who really understands how to analyze and pick apart and really fully appreciate those different three planes of motion and how forces are acting upon the body in your sport. Because if that therapist is tentative, we're in trouble. And I think sometimes some of the programs that we see out there, you know, whether it's in a story on the news or in a journal article or even in a course that we go to sometimes, sometimes what's happening is we're trying to create too sterile, too constraining of an environment for these athletes. And a knee is a perfect example, Greg. Very commonly, we talk about landing a squat or doing a lunge, and we want to see the knee go over the toes, directed over the foot versus directing to the left or to the right, but generally over the foot. And generally speaking, I totally agree with that. However, if you watch videotape of any soccer player, football player, basketball player, someone fielding in a baseball game, a lacrosse player, name the sport, you're going to see athletes who, when they cut and change direction, when they land and get bumped, their knee, and we'll just talk about the knee for now, this is true of other body parts as well, doesn't end up landing in the perfect position. So we certainly don't want to train them to go in very bad, evil, dangerous places. But I think we have to be careful as professionals as well, not just the athlete, but the professional, of getting too sterile in the way that we try and protect somebody. Early on, absolutely, high protection phase. Gradually over time, just prior to return to sport, critical that we start giving measured doses of reality to that athlete. And we've got to make sure that we've prepared them to not only handle that sterile environment of everything falling in the right place, like your cross-country runner example, their foot's landing right where they wanted to every time. That's fine. But what about the cross-country runner who sprained their ankle, and they're dealing with a hilly course that's a little bit wet, and a pack of kids going around a turn on a downhill slope that has an uneven landing on it, and that ankle lands that way again? I believe my job as a physical therapist is to understand the mechanics and the risks and the activities in that sport so well that I'm not tentative, that before I let that cross-country athlete back, I haven't just made sure they can land on a flat surface, but I make sure they can land if they've been bumped. I make sure they can land if there's a little a tilt to the left or a tilt to the right or a twist that occurs. It's our job to prepare them for the what-ifs. And at Peak Performance, I think, you know, the thing that I appreciate about, you know, our approach, but also the staff that we have, is that level of biomechanical training lets us try to help build that competence so the athlete is confident and we, too, can be confident, because we know we prepared them for all the what-ifs, not just everything falling in line perfectly.
So Mike, you know, in our remaining minute and a half or so here, you know, what can coaches do? I mean, we have spoken, you know, in past shows very much about bringing the coach in and having them be far more educated and involved about things like this, like rehabbing and you know, the kids or the athletes not being tentative. You know, what can we do or what can we suggest for the coaches? Because not every coach is going to be as informed as they should be, but at the same time, not every coach is a PT like yourself or a sports trainer that can work with the kids. So what can we do to help them?
Well, let me give you just one example of what we talked about that feeds off of the example I gave last week. Let's say you have an athlete who plays soccer, and they're coming back from an ankle sprain, or maybe they twisted it earlier in the game, and they seem to be walking around fine. They kind of shook it off. It was a minor tweak, and you're wondering if they can play, but the trainer's not there for the school. What kind of sensible thing to do to prepare that athlete to see if they can play on the field? Well, let's step back a moment and realize that the game of soccer is going to require hard decelerations, moving in multiple directions. They may have to land moving sideways. They may have to land twisting, and there's contact. If the only thing I do as a coach or a trainer or a physical therapist for that matter, but if the only thing I do is see if Mary or Susie or Johnny can run forward really fast, but I don't make them stop on a dime on that injured leg, then I'm short-selling the testing. If I haven't had them hop on one leg side to side and twist, or leap and land onto it and land on one leg and land on it in a kind of an odd position and test it, I may have guaranteed they can sprint, but I haven't really shown prior to putting them back in that they can handle all those other unique stresses. So I think part of it is stepping back a bit and thinking just like coaches do think. Coaches like yourself, Greg, you think of things in stepwise fashion, right? You don't start with the most complex activities first. You build them gradually. We want to make sure that as an athlete going back to a sport, we think about the big picture, but then let's step back and take some of those small steps and look at each one of them. Can you sprint? Can you backpedal? Can you jump? Can you land on it if you're twisting to the left? If you're running and you get bumped, how do you deal with that? And so I think part of it is just being a little bit more comprehensive with the way that we check our athletes. It only takes a few minutes. You know, it doesn't have to be a four-hour test. But I think we have to be careful to get beyond some of the simplicities, because that athlete, if they go back, we're throwing them to the wolves. We're putting them in harm's way if we haven't really crossed our T's and dotted our I's, whether you're a coach or a parent or the athlete themselves or certainly a paid professional like an athletic trainer or a doctor or a therapist. We've all got that job to do.
Well, Mike, you know, it seems to me that one of the first steps that the coaches and the parents and athletes themselves can do is to certainly check out physical therapy tips and information and blogs that you have provided, both on the Peak Performance Physical Therapy website as well as the Youth Sports Now radio website, where they can go to and get some of this information. And, of course, if you need to, give Mike a call and get over and see him, and hopefully he'll be able to, not hopefully, but he will be able to help you along with his staff for your players if you are a coach or a parent. When we come back, I'll have some final thoughts for the day, and we'll wrap up this segment of Youth Sports Now.